July the 5th, 1964. Good morning, folks. You know it's not right on a nice Sunday morning for folks to have worries, but if you do have some, why don't you just shove them aside now and sit down in front of your radio. Try to imagine yourself down here in beautiful, peaceful Renfro Valley, away from all the rest of the world, except for the Renfro Valley folks and their visitors, those who gathered here with them in a big old plain country barn, who come to listen to some old-time songs and a few remarks about other days and other ways. So you picture yourself right here with us and ready to share with us the simple pleasures of the Renfro Valley Gathering. Get away from us. Here it is, July, and summer will be halfway gone before well begun. Nice weather here in the valley this morning. Everything's green and fresh after recent much-needed rains. Just another beautiful Sunday morning in Renfro Valley, Kentucky. Now our opening hymn, Never Alone, and here's Miss Bess with the starting chord on the Old Parlor organ. Much to say about the Renfro Valley Bugle here of late, but we're happy to note that Bugle readers have been saying a lot about it. They seem extremely well pleased with the new size and format, and say they welcome the extra reading that the increased column space gives them. One thing for sure, nobody can complain about the June issue being late. We got it out right on time, and the printers promise it'll be like that from now on. By the way, the new printing process has given us much better illustrations, as you've noticed. We want to try to do something in the July issue that we hope we can do. We have here in the museum a very rare, very valuable old newspaper, one that was printed in Vicksburg, Mississippi, July the 2nd, 1863. It was printed on the back of strips of wallpaper, owing to the scarcity of paper in that beleaguered city. It was a one-page affair, and at one place in it, the editor, J.M. Swords, writes of General Grant boasting that he'd eat dinner in Vicksburg on July the 4th, which the editor declared would never happen. But a note at the very bottom of the page tells the whole story, and it did happen. What we want to say here is we hope to be able to photograph that old paper and reprint it in the July issue of the Bugle. If we can't print it as a facsimile copy, then we'll print its contents in our own type so you can see what was in it. We have in mind reproducing other historic papers, posters, and documents in future copies or issues of the Renfro Valley Bugle. Subscription price, remember, is $2 per year to everybody. Now the Farmer Sisters for everybody with their first song for this morning. Utica, Kentucky, will be 93 years old. Today marks the 97th birthday of T.M. Haley of Corydon, Indiana, who never misses a Sunday morning broadcast, was given a trip to Renfro Valley as a birthday present on his 95th birthday. Anson J. King of Vermontville, Michigan, is celebrating his 91st birthday. Miss Cecilia Dawes, Rochester, Minnesota, is 93 and still does all her own housework. The only 100th birthday for today we have to report is that of Alex A. Grossman of Burnett, Texas. Ms. Nellie Shays is 90. She lives in Claremore, Oklahoma. Ms. Elizabeth Sims, Little Rock, Arkansas, is 93. Ms. William Slapsky reports wedding anniversaries for a couple of friends and for her sister and husband, who have been married 60 years, but forgets to mention the names of her sister and brother-in-law. Although she does tell us the name of the neighbors, Mr. and Mrs. Otis Van Ostrom, who are celebrating their 51st anniversary. Mr. and Ms. W.M. Carroll of Kalamazoo, Michigan, have been married 60 years. Mr. and Ms. Arthur Knight of Pendleton, Kentucky, are celebrating their 55th anniversary. Mr. and Ms. Marcus Grill of Jonesville, Michigan, have been married 59 years. Mr. and Ms. Eve McDougall of Upton, Kentucky, 69, the oldest for this morning, I believe. Mr. and Ms. Will Snyder of Waldron, Michigan, 60. Mr. and Ms. Paul V. Loper of Wellington, Ohio, are celebrating a golden wedding anniversary. And so are Mr. and Ms. Luther Garst of Dearborn, Michigan, Dr. and Ms. A.T. Ostendorf of Burkhardt, Wisconsin, Reverend and Mrs. D.F. Binder of Fairgrove, Michigan. No family reunion for today except those already reported. For Sunday, July the 12th, we'll announce the Reneker reunion, White Oak Methodist Church, Cynthiana, Kentucky. The Ackerman family reunion, Atwood Lake Park in Delroy, Ohio. Caswell reunion, American Legion Park at Paris, Kentucky. The Stoudenberg reunion at the home of Eldon Stoudenberg of Cass City, Michigan. feeling that the air would be very likely filled with the regular 4th of July celebrations and programs this year, we had our say on patriotic matters a few weeks ago on Flag Day. And today we wanted to devote what time we have to a famous American who was born on the 4th of July, 138 years ago, and whose heart-touching songs and melodies have done much to create in Americans that love of home and country for which they've long been famous. This, then, marks the 138th anniversary of the birth of Stephen Collins Foster, who has exerted more influence in the field of simple American music than any other man who ever lived. He's always been a man of some mystery and came at last to a tragic end through his own failings. He's always been much misunderstood, and so has his musical ability. At the time of his death, he was considered more or less as a hack writer of inferior musical talent, but we know now that such was not the case. Neither was he, in the strictest sense, a folk songwriter. He wrote in the popular vein of his day, and he wrote songs to sell as any other songwriter. When the fad for Ethiopian or Negro songs became popular, he switched to them almost exclusively, and his best-known songs were in that vein. Songs like Old Folks at Home, My Old Kentucky Home Goodnight, Old Black Joe, Masses in the Cold, Cold Ground, and many others made him famous. In a review this morning of some of Foster's songs, you would naturally expect us to sing some of these just mentioned. But since the radio industry seems to frown upon the use of the controversial word darkies, since we're not willing to change the song for the way Foster wrote them, we're having recourse to his songs of another type. Now, here's one based on an incident in his own boyhood. Unfortunately, Foster's greatest talents as a songwriter had been somewhat diminished by the time he switched from the minstrel songs, which had had such great vogue during his most productive years, but were beginning to lose their popularity by the beginning of the Civil War. All along, from his first song to his last, he had sandwiched in songs of a different type, but his best efforts went into the down south home songs of a race and bondage. Now, these are the only ones that many folks have designated as folk songs, although they are not such in the strictest sense of the word. Among the many songs Foster wrote, which can still be sung without deletion, no doubt the best known to the present generation is I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair, a song heard over and over on radio programs a few years ago during the hassle with the various Music Protective Association. I have here in our old music library several source books on Foster and his music. One of the rarest, most valuable, is a book on his life written by his older brother, Morrison, which includes also all the songs that Foster wrote, together with stories of the circumstances under which many of them were written. I have also had correspondence in the past with the niece of Stephen Foster. Many of the first edition copies of Foster's songs, now preserved in the Great Lily Collection, came from my library years ago. Of particular interest to me have been finding unknown and forgotten Foster songs, now seldom heard anywhere. One of these, Red Brigham sings this morning, Our Bright Summer Days Are Gone. It was written in the declining days of Foster's life when his bright summer days were indeed gone, and he was sinking rapidly toward a pauper's grave. This, like many other later Foster songs, was written when he was penniless and was sold outright for whatever a publisher would pay him for it. Did you ever hear it? Tried his hand at writing war songs when the war between the states loomed in the offing, but never came up with a successful effort along that line. Many of his earlier songs, notably Oh Susanna, were very popular with the boys in both the blue and the gray, but nothing he wrote about the great conflict itself ever amounted to much. Since his death occurred in 1864, he'd had time for only a few efforts at timely war songs, and these were written at a time when his talent and genius was a dying flame. Another song of his, written in his best years before the war, was a favorite of President Abraham Lincoln, who once shed tears when he heard it played in the White House. Foster wrote it in 1856, following the death of a little girl who, attempting to cross the street on a rainy night with a shawl over her head, was run over and killed by a dray. She was of a poor family in the neighborhood, and Foster spent the night with the dead child and her parents, trying to console them in their loss. Foster considered this one of his best numbers, and so do I, but it was for some reason slow to catch on. During the first 9 months after its publication, brought in only $39.08 in royalties. And here is Gentle Annie.
will come no more. Gentle Annie, like a flower, thy spirit did depart. The many that have bloomed in the summer of my heart, shall we never more behold thee, never hear thy winning voice. We have roamed and loved mid the bowers when thy downy cheeks were in their bloom. Now I stand alone mid the flowers while they mingle their thy tune. Shall we never more behold thee, never hear thy winning voice again, when the spring time comes, gentle
up about Stephen Collins Foster in the 100 years since his tragic death. Many people have come up with claims to have written many of his songs, claims that have never been taken seriously because they were not advanced until years after his death. Then, too, a competent musician could see in all his songs a certain style and sentiment peculiarly his own and unlike that of any other writer. Some few of his songs did carry the names of co-writers, notably that of George Cooper, a gifted poet, but at the same time a man with alcoholic tendencies that only hastened Foster's end along the same downward path. The first colored movie film I remember seeing of Stephen Collins Foster showed him selling the manuscript to Old Kentucky Home to a clerk in a grocery store for $5. Now this, of course, was pure fabrication, but not much further from the facts than the claim of certain people that he wrote My Old Kentucky Home in the shrine of that name at Bardstown, Kentucky. It's fairly certain that he actually visited that home, the old Rowan Mansion at the time, but not at a time anywhere near the date of the publication of the song, and it's highly probable that he got his inspiration from a visit there, but it was not written within the walls of that home itself. I've seen Foster's old manuscript book in which he first wrote the words to My Old Kentucky Home, Good Night. That shows that it was first written, Oh, good night, good night, poor Uncle Tom. Grieve not for your old Kentucky home. And it was later changed to The Sun Shines Bright, My Old Kentucky Home, and so forth. And that's led many people to conclude that he first had in mind writing a song to go along with the book, Uncle Tom's Cabin, at that time just becoming a bestseller of his day. There are hundreds of other legends, some perhaps true, some clearly false, woven around the man who found a voice for America, gave her first and still greatest home folk song. He was one of the first to write sympathetically the Negro slave, and that race has, in my opinion, been very short-sighted in taking a stand against his greatest songs as he first wrote them. Now the Farmer Sisters with today's special request number, and it's sung for Mr. and Mrs. Harlan Dyer of Albany, Kentucky.
When we climb
Distant visitors of Elma Hawkins of Brooksville, Florida, Mr. and Ms. Fred Desiper of Donaldson, Arkansas, Mr. and Ms. Lowell Albright from Stockton, Illinois, Mr. and Ms. Otto Bright, Mr. and Ms. Al Kovac from Port Sanilac, Michigan, Mr. and Ms. C.H. Waterworth, Mr. and Ms. Larry Hutchison, Elkton, Michigan, and Mr. and Ms. Clarence Rosevink and a party of nine from Napoleon, Ohio. Now our closing hymn, Only Trust Him. That's all for now, folks. This is John Lair and the Renfro Valley folks from Renfro Valley, Kentucky, hoping that you'll be with us again next Sunday for another Renfro Valley gathering.